These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA.
All right, guys, we've got one of my favorite people in the community, Jordan Wittenberg, with us today. We're going to be talking about a story that he just recently told me, but I want to dig deeper today about knocking a door and making $100,000+. And not only that, but also assigning it to somebody that went on to make $50,000 on their own. Multiple people made a lot of money on this deal. And I think one of the hardest things that we'll do as men is wondering, should I turn right or should I turn left? And being caught at that stoplight of life of making hard decisions. And Jordan's going to jump into that today in his story about how he made $100,000+ on one stinking deal. Jordan, what's up, brother? How you
doing? What's up, Pace? Excited to tell the story because it's a pretty wild one.
I know. And, you know, by the way, you just won some state championship or something?
I coach high school basketball in Idaho. And when I joined the staff, we were a 500 team last year. And
what does that mean?
It means we won as many games as we lost.
Okay.
And so it wasn't like I was joining some perennial powerhouse. So made an incredible run towards the end of the year and just started playing our best basketball in playoffs.
Same players.
Essentially the same team coming back. They just had, were a year older and better and figured some things out and how connected they were and just played good basketball at the right time of the season. We ended up beating the number one seed in the state championship game and won the state title. And it was a unbelievable experience.
So, wow.
Yeah, really happy for the kids too.
Wow, dude. Yeah. In a lot of ways, that's cooler than a $100,000 assignment.
In some ways, yeah, absolutely. Because it's just like, you know, you got 3,000 people out, alumni out at the from the community all supporting, and it's just bigger than you, and it's memories that those kids will have for the rest of their lives.
You know, what's interesting is, have you guys all heard that, by the way, we have a live audience. Guys, give it up, live audience. Everybody's heard the Mexican fisherman story, right? What?
Yes.
Okay, can I take 3 minutes and tell this story?
Yeah.
It's one of the best stories of all time. And I'll read it. I'll read it to you because I will, I'll make it that concise. Okay. Wow. This is really great. And we'll tie it into your deal. Mexican fisherman story. Ties really, really, okay. Oh my gosh. Such a great story. All right, cool. Here it is. This is the story that started the Be More with Less movement for me. Okay, great. This, of course. Okay. An American investment banker was at the pier of a small coastal Mexican village when a small boat with just one fisherman docked. Inside the small boat were several large yellowfish tuna. The American complimented the Mexican on the quality of his fish and asked how long it took for him to catch them. The Mexican replied, "Only a little while." The American then asked, why didn't he stay out longer and catch more fish? The Mexican said he had enough to support his family's immediate needs. The American then went and asked, but what do you do with the rest of your time? The Mexican fisherman asked, well, I sleep late. I fish a little. I play with my children. I take siestas with my wife. Oh, that's the best. Oh,
that's how right? more can come about. Yeah.
There you go. I like that. It says, I sleep late, I fish a little, play with my children, take siestas with my wife, Maria. I stroll into the village each evening where I sip wine and I play guitar with my amigos. I have a full and busy life. The American scoffed. Okay, I'm a Harvard MBA and I could help you. You should spend more time fishing and with the proceeds buy a bigger boat. With the proceeds from the bigger boat, you could buy several boats. Eventually, you would have a fleet of fishing boats. Instead of selling your catch to a middleman, you would sell directly to the processor, eventually opening up your own cannery. You would control the product, processing, and distribution. You would need to leave this small fishing village and move to Mexico City, then LA, and eventually New York City, where you will run your expanding enterprise. The Mexican fisherman asked, but how long will this all take? The American replies, 15, maybe 20 years. And the Hispanic guy says, okay, but what then? Then what do I do if I hit that? The American says, that's the best part. When the time is right, you would announce an IPO and sell your company stock to the public and become incredibly rich. You would make millions. Mexican fisherman says, millions? Then what? Mm-hmm. The American says, then you would retire. move to a small coastal fishing village where you would sleep late, fish a little, play with your kids, take siestas with your wife, stroll to the evening villages where you would sip wine and play guitar with your amigos. Right? So I think about this, and, you know, Jordan, something that's impressive and really cool about what you've done with the money, actually, that you earned here, I think is the coolest part about the story, and I can't wait till you get to that point.
Yeah.
And I look at the high school thing, you know, you pouring into these young men and being a coach to them and giving them guidance and love and information they didn't have before and turning them and chiseling into stronger men is probably your life's calling. Not making $100,000 checks.
Right.
But ironically, the $100,000 check does alleviate some of the stress and the burden of the everyday life and allows you to live your purpose. And so that's why we chase money to a certain degree. And there's just this really harmonious balance that we're always trying to find, right?
Totally.
You're definitely on that journey. You're trying to figure that out, which is fun. And I think all of us are trying to figure that out. At the end of the day, do we really want to be rich or do we want to win the state championship when you're not on the court, but you're coaching the people who do win the championship and you get to be a big part of that puzzle? That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, the business side kind of enables a little more freedom to do the things that really feel meaningful and impactful. And so they got to go together. Because it's tough to make a living on a high school basketball coach salary. But if you can develop other skills and gain other knowledge, that can enable you to open doors for business opportunities. And in this case, something that ended up preventing someone from being homeless at a late stage of his life.
Seems like your calling is just helping a lot of people, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, I think that's what we're supposed to do.
I think it's what makes us feel good. I think our creator reminds us that every time we help somebody, you get that touch of light inside your body and you're like, oh, I want to do this more. And it's just a reminder our creator gives us to a certain degree.
Yeah. And I think when it's all said and done, I think our lives will be measured on things like that, like the difference we made in others' lives.
Well, this difference you made in William, your seller's life,
yeah,
was not an easy one. So let's go through the story. So you joined the community about a year ago?
About a year.
Mm-hmm. And we got to hang out in community camp.
Yep.
You're wearing your community camp shirt. Who else was at community camp this last year?
Awesome time in Kalispell.
The greatest thing I've ever been a part of in my entire life. I am so looking forward to it this summer.
Yeah.
So you joined about a year ago. You start networking with other people. And, you know, you've been a real estate agent for a good amount of time, right?
About 4 years.
Okay. And so you already had real estate knowledge. You understood a lot of things. Where was your jumping off point of generating leads and opportunities? Was it foreclosing or doing foreclosure door knocking, or how did you get to this point where you knocked on William's door?
I mean, as an agent, I was just getting referral business and generating my own stuff, traditional ways, open houses and things like that. And then when I got plugged in with Sub 2 and I was learning creative finance and the opportunity in finding distressed sellers, I just kind of got out of my comfort zone and started knocking doors. And not something you really want to do, but, and I didn't have a whole lot of a strategy going into it. I was kind of just like, I'm going to figure out what's going on with the situation and figure it out as I go.
So your jumping off point in generating off-market leads was door knocking foreclosures.
Yeah.
That's ballsy.
Yeah. And with your, you know, how you introduced it with my decision to keep knocking, cause I'd knocked a few doors that night. My grandma was just visiting in town and I wanted to go home and visit with her and my kids and hang out. And there was one other house left on that ride back that I could have knocked. And I just had a few unsuccessful interactions prior to that. And I ended up just deciding, I think I'm just going to do one more. And, and that ended up being the door.
This was an interesting thing. So your wife at the time, I'm kind of letting some of the cat out of the bag. Your wife at the time was working a full-time job.
Working full-time remotely as an executive assistant to some C-suite level execs with a healthcare company.
Yeah. Okay. So she's busy.
But with two young kids.
You got two young kids and she's pregnant. Did you know she was pregnant?
At the time, yeah.
Okay. She knew she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Now I just met your baby.
Yeah.
He was sleeping.
Yep. Ace.
Ace Jordan. So she's stay-at-home mom, has a full-time job. Executive assistant, which means that she's working Saturdays and Sundays even. She's doing everything she possibly can. So you're basically like, all right, you had a couple of door knocks. They fail. That's not a good feeling.
Yeah.
You then are at a stoplight, essentially. Mm-hmm. And you go left to go home. Mm-hmm. You go right to William's house. And there's a justification. I see a lot of men do this. And this is where the delicate balance comes in. The delicate balance comes in where you could have easily argued, I did work today. I did try and knock on doors. Mm-hmm. It's not my fault it wasn't unsuccessful or it wasn't successful. I'm going to turn left today because I've done my duty to my job. I'm now going to do my duty to my wife and help her because I know she expects me. It's my grandma that's visiting. My wife doesn't want to be there by herself with my grandma and the kids and all that kind of stuff, shouldering and juggling. It's not that she's not against it or she's against it. It's just she would probably appreciate my help. So that's your argument, and the pull of the gravity to your house is on the left. And then there's the pull of the gravity on your right-hand side, which is William's house is this way. And what have I always said about, what do I say? Anything that sticks in your mind of things I say about door knocking, why it's a good avenue for success. Because nobody wants to do it.
Yeah, you're setting yourself apart by doing the work people mostly want to avoid.
Right.
As you put it the other day.
Yeah. So you're at the stoplight. It's red. It's about to go green. And you're having this pull in your mind of like, do I go home to help my wife? I should help my wife. I'm a good husband. I should help my wife. I'm not a piece of crap husband. I'm going to go home and help my wife. And then you had this pull of, wait, hold on a second. There's a reason why people are successful in door knocking. And it's because they don't quit in moments like this.
Yeah. And when I got there too, there was a wholesaler at his door.
Oh, there was. I don't know this part of the story.
Yeah. So there was, you know, this was just a few days prior to an auction. I mean, this thing was coming down to the wire. And what these wholesalers kept coming across was that this guy who had been living there for over 40 years, 74-year-old man, he was not the titled owner to the house. He had inherited it from his grandma, who had passed away about 30 years earlier in the early 90s. And she left it to him and as well. Maybe I should go back just a bit.
You should go back. You skipped over my favorite part of the whole story.
Okay.
Here's the part you skipped over was the first line that William said to you at the door.
Right. So that wholesaler leaves. I say, okay, now I'm
going to go. So you turn right. Obviously, you turn right at the stoplight. You go down to William's house. You're sitting in front of the house. You see somebody there. That's also another point where if you see somebody, I know, John, you've been on appointments. Who else has been on appointments before where you go to the house and somebody else is already at the house meeting with the seller, right? Boom.
Audio commercial, get creative for sub-2 students to join pacescommunity.com. Hey, while you're listening to this episode, do you ever think, man, I'm sick of everybody else winning at the game of real estate using all these creative finance strategies that Pace has obviously taught them? They've obviously joined a community of people that are collaborating, helping each other, being go-givers, meeting up in person, going on appointments with each other, showing each other how their businesses work, and filling all the gaps of understanding in each other's brains. Well, if you are ready to make a change in your business and actually get the traction that you've been praying for, hoping for, thinking about, and making goals all around, the best way to do that is join a community of people helping people. Go to joinpacescommunity.com to get started.
And there's a lot of times where you look at that and you go, you know what? My wife needs my help. I'm going to go home, take care of the kids.
Yeah.
Did you have any sort of tug in your mind?
I mean, I was parked on the side of the road and one of the neighbors was actually like kind of suspicious because it's just this guy sitting in his car in front of a house. He's like, hey, can I help you? So he thought I was like, you know, some creepy guy. Just
how do you say that when you're bothered by somebody? He's like, hey, can I help you? Yeah, is that how it was?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. You said it a lot nicer than I think he probably said it to you.
Yeah, he had a little tone to it.
I love it.
Yeah.
So this dude, had he had success getting William to answer the door?
Yeah. He was just talking to him in the driveway. So William didn't have a car, didn't have a phone, didn't have an email, didn't have any of the stuff you might normally reach out. Came to find that out. But I was waiting for that wholesaler to leave and then I was just going to go talk to him. So when I go knock his door,
there's so many lessons here. Think about this one lesson. Mm-hmm. The wholesaler leaves and most people that are new, you're brand new in this situation, right? Like in a lot of regards, obviously
in that situation. Yeah.
You'd never successfully gotten a foreclosure door knocked and gotten a deal done at this point. So this is new territory for you.
Right.
You see another person talking to the guy and you're like, well, he already beat me to the punch. How many freaking times does this happen on a daily basis for somebody that's new in the investment world? Mm-hmm. Oh, competition. I'm going to back off.
And he clearly already had rapport with William because I could overhear their conversation a little bit from my window cracked.
You sneaky son of a gun.
I just wanted to see what, maybe I could learn something from it. And William seemed to really want to do the deal with this guy. I could hear him saying, "You're my only hope. You're my only hope."
No.
Like, he thought it was going to auction for sure. And so he was banking on him winning the auction and would hopefully rent it back to him.
I see.
And the guy just kept saying, I could hear him say, "I can't make any promises." And so I could tell he's just trying to get the deal. And he really didn't have William's. I didn't feel like he had his best interest.
Must have been a real estate agent.
Strong sorry. Potential.
Sorry, sorry, sorry.
So I go to knock the door. And I remember you asked me, what was your first line to him?
Yeah.
And he had the first line. Before I could even say anything, he said, "Don't waste your time. It's hopeless." Basically just shutting the door for me.
How many things, like the universe is like testing Jordan in this situation. Like, okay, you're at the stoplight. Your wife needs your help. And it's late. You've already failed at door knocking. You should probably just go home. He turns right, pulls up, sees a wholesaler in the driveway having some rapport. Oh, could easily go away. Or somebody comes up and knocks on your door. Can I help you?
Yeah.
Like all these little things. And then on top of it, William says, what does he say again?
Just don't waste your time. It's hopeless.
Don't waste your time. It's hopeless. It's like, all right, the universe is like, I'm going to test you, Jordan.
Yeah. And so my response to him was, I'm here to solve problems. Mm. And he said, okay, come in. And so I sat down in his living room. He explains the whole situation for about an hour. And he can talk. And so it was on and on. And it's like a hoarder house, you know? And so he's showing me the will that his grandma wrote and his name is in it. And he realizes he didn't get it probated, which means he's not on the title to the property. And so even if he wanted to sell it, he couldn't. It had reached a point in the
process. Why is he in foreclosure?
He hadn't paid his property taxes for over 3 years.
But he owned the house free and clear.
He inherited the house free and clear. His grandma bought it when she passed. She left it to him. And he had been paying the property taxes on it for years, but was never really on the books for it. And the county doesn't really care if the taxes are coming in, if you're the title owner, until a certain point when they haven't got it, they haven't got their back taxes, then
it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Like at that point, it can only be redeemed by the titled owner. And so the reason he told me it's hopeless is he had just been to the county treasurer's office with that other wholesaler who said, let me catch you up on your back taxes and buy the house from you. And the county treasurer said, his name is not on this title. He can't even sell it if he wants to. So he thought he had given up. You know, I can't even sell this if I want to. I can't pay these back taxes. Like,
so this wholesaler was back at the house giving William an update, and the only way he could give him an update was actually go to his house physically. So I imagine this entire ordeal, every time you're working with William, you're having to go physically to this dude's house.
Having to drive there, yeah, because he had no phone, no email, no nothing.
Good.
So
good.
It was about a 20-minute drive from Meridian to Boise every time I needed to have any correspondence with him. Eventually built a relationship with his neighbor who had a cell phone and could relay information.
Oh my gosh, bro.
Yeah.
Okay. If somebody, we already know the punchline is you made $100,000 on this deal, but obviously how you got there, sure. I don't even think we've started the challenges at all.
Really not.
So where did the challenges start coming up?
Well, I wanted him to be able to still live there. And so this initially I thought could be a seller finance opportunity. So we're talking about what he needs to get from the deal. I got his highest offer he had received from another wholesaler, which was $200,000, which was about right for what it could sell on the retail market. And I told him I would match that offer, but the problem is you can't sell it to me even if you wanted to.
Right.
So we have to go a step back and we have to prove you're the heir to this property. And that requires finding a probate attorney. And I posed the question out in sub two, got a few different ideas on how to go about it. And my wife reached out to several different probate attorneys, like seven of them, before we finally found one that would say yes. In this amount of time, about 3 days
Wow.
before the auction. And so
I You know how many other people would have, if they got no, I'm not interested, you call two. You know how many people would have just stopped calling probate attorneys? 99% yeah. of people.
Right. Well, she called through seven of them. And so that's credit to her. And she was persistent in that because we had something. Because he basically said, look, if you can stop the sale, I will sell you the house. And so now I had to figure out how can I possibly stop the sale? The only way was we needed to get his name on the title.
Yeah.
So he could even have the right to sell it to me. So we were brainstorming with attorneys, what can we even do here? I end up finding out that will with his name on it doesn't mean anything essentially, because after 3 years it becomes invalid. And the route we had to go was proving he was just the rightful heir to the property as the only living family member. So
how do you do that?
Now it becomes documentation gathering time.
In
3 days. And this is a guy who has a driver's license from 2001
nice.
As his one source of ID.
I love it.
Expired.
What's this guy doing all day? Do you ever just wonder, like, what are you just sitting in the house staring out the window?
He just watches TV all day, like 12 hours a day.
Wow.
Just watches TV all day. And he has, you know, he had some health issues. He had arthritis. He stopped opening the mail. He just wasn't feeling good about himself.
Mm.
No family, just living by himself.
Yeah, I've had a lot of those sellers.
Yeah, so he just needed help. He needed all the help. And he didn't help himself at all. And so it was like, at some point, it felt like I wanted it more than he wanted it for himself. Because he was kind of reserved to almost just, I was like, what were you going to do?
He's going to let it go.
Nowhere to go. Yeah, he had nowhere to go. I mean.
Homeless.
No, he would have been homeless. Yeah. Like 74 years old with arthritis and no money. So I bring to the attorney, look, I have this will. He's the only one named on it. You know, he's the rightful heir to this property. That was the bottom line for me that made me want to push was like his grandma's last wishes were for him to inherit this home. He's lived there over 40 years. It should be his house. Okay. Now he had an oversight in not doing the paperwork correctly. And he was really regretful about that. He was kind of embarrassed that I never got this probated. So I said, you know, maybe there's a way we can patch it up. You know, so this attorney says, we can file this affidavit of heirship with the court and we'll see if they'll stop the auction. So that was the route we went. I gathered as much as I could. Essentially, the attorney had to sue the county to put an injunction and stop the auction. And they had to review the merits of everything we could draft up based on the limited documents that we had. And we had a limited time to do it. So when we served up all those papers, we were kind of patiently waiting to find out, okay, is the judge going to rule in our favor? That not even in our favor, just will they put a stop to the auction so we can plead our case? And that takes us up to the day before the auction. So with this part, this was right around the July 4th holiday. We had, the auction was set to start July 5th.
Mm.
There's verbiage on the county website saying.
That's not good. I mean, if you really think about it, I'll tell you something about the rest of the country thinks they're patriotic. Nobody's more patriotic than Utah and Idaho.
Yeah, it's like the Super Bowl of holidays.
It's the
like
Super
Bowl. A marathon of fireworks. There's
you've never been. You're not an American unless you've had 4th of July in Utah or Idaho. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Everybody stops working. It is the most important thing.
Yeah.
It's like weather is the most perfect thing. People are outside. You ever see Sandlot? Okay. You remember in like some of the opening scenes, there's like a 4th of July party and that's actually filmed in Utah. That is how it is. It is truly quintessential 4th of July.
Yeah.
Everybody stops working 2nd of July. They're doing rodeos.
Right.
In Idaho, every town has a different town called Cherry Days, Peach Days, Strawberry Day, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it is such a big deal. And Idaho is just as big, if not bigger.
Yeah. So the 2nd was a Sunday. The 3rd was a Monday.
Of course.
And so the third is basically the last day we have to stop this thing. In our eyes, because the fourth is a court holiday, or they recognize it. And then the auction's set to start on the fifth at 8 a.m. And like I said, once it starts, it doesn't stop.
The good thing about you, Idaho, is nobody's hungover in Idaho that won't show up for July 5th.
I can't speak for the whole state, but that's probably partially true. So, so we get a call from the attorney at 3 o'clock that Monday saying the judge has agreed to sign the order to stop the auction if you can post $20,000 cash bond by the end of the day.
That's in 2 hours.
Okay. Clock's ticking right away. So, I mean, I don't even wait. I'm to my bank. Okay. And to your point with all these things shutting down, my credit union is closed on July 3rd.
Of course.
I come to find out.
Yeah.
So
that's an Idaho holiday, bro.
So I say, okay, let me transfer 20K over to another account and withdraw it that way. They put a 10K limit
on
how much I could transfer. So now I'm scrambling, right? It's like 3:15 and I'm like, I can't.
It's like you want to count up all the points where he should have just quit. I think we're at a dozen right now.
Well, then the attorney needed me to put up a retainer fee of $1,500 just to give us a shot. And I just felt it was worth the gamble because we had a case. So I call, I'm thinking, who can I call? Because I need 20 grand now. And I call a good friend up there. He's a mortgage broker. We've done deals in the past and have a good relationship. His name's Bryce Gonser.
Shout out, Bryce.
Bryce came through in the clutch for me. Like, I was like, man, I'll give you $1,000 if I can just, if you can cut me a check right now, I'll pay you on Wednesday when my bank opens up. So no JV agreement, no paperwork. Wouldn't advise it in the Gator community.
Don't do that, guys.
No. But when
Jordan's,
you know,
over
someone,
here breaking rules, all right?
This was a buzzer beater situation.
Yeah,
so we didn't have time to drop paperwork. So he went on my word, though. You know, and so I think that might be another nugget from the story is if you have people that trust you and you've done deals with, your word means something.
Yeah.
So he said, yeah, man, I got you. I said, I don't even have time to tell you all about this deal, but you could be a part of something really cool right now.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I got you. So he goes to his bank, gets me a cashier's check for 20 grand. I meet him there, pick up the check. I headed to the courthouse. It's 4:15 by the time I get there. And the court clerk says, the judge went home for the day. We're not going to take your check.
Classic.
So my response is, look, the judge reviewed the merits of the case. They said, this is, you know, it's solid. If we post the money here by the end of the day, she said, I'm sorry, I don't know what to tell you. He's gone for the day. I said, is there anyone else I can talk to? Is there another judge? Anybody? I have the money right here. I have what you asked for. She said, there's only one other judge right now and he's in session. And I said, well, I'll wait till 5 o'clock if I need to talk to somebody. But I could tell she wasn't that interested in helping me or really cared at that
point. She was already thinking about 4th of July. Yeah. She wanted sure. to go home.
Yeah. And the county has a vested interest in the property at this point too. So I'm sitting there, I'm just watching the clock tick and it's like 4:25. And I'm like, I got to do something. So I'm like, I'm going to go find that judge that's still here. And if I need to bust into the courtroom and interrupt proceedings, I'm going to find a way to be like, this is an emergency. I need to get this signed. And so I tried to get in. This one door was locked. This other guy's like, what are you doing, dude? Like, you can't go in there.
Can I help you?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
It's the same guy on the street.
He works at the court too. Yeah. It was the exact same tone. Yeah. But he actually could help me. And he pointed me to a lady who I explained the urgency of the situation. It's like 4:35 now. And I said, this old man is going to be homeless if we don't get this thing signed. I have everything we need. Can you help me? So she's like, okay, I'm going to try to do something for you. So she goes and looks in another courtroom. She happens to find the very judge who was still there.
This is what I was waiting for. This was my favorite part of the whole story.
Yeah.
Is how many times will people lie to you because they're just lazy?
Maybe lied, maybe ignorance. I don't know. But it was bad information either way.
But again, this is the kind of stuff you hear with people real estate agents.
Yeah.
You'll hear real estate agents like, oh, that's illegal. That's not possible. That's not this. It's lack of education.
Yeah.
and lack of interest of actually finding the real answer. She could have easily, right? This girl, mm-hmm. not that she's a bad person. She's just a person.
County clerk.
And these are things persons do. These are person things. He's gone for the day.
Yep.
She did not know that. She made that up. If he had gone home for the day, then she would have known that. He had not gone home for the day. So it's not, she just made it up.
Yeah.
And instead of you going, oh, darn, shucks, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
You're opening up doors you should not be opening up. And you're barreling through like a bull.
Yeah.
And then finally you end up finding the actual judge.
It's like you got to talk to the right person.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily need to trust everybody along the way.
Right.
And there's usually another way to figure things out. And that proved to be the case. So this is like 4:50. You know, we have 10 minutes to get this. She brings the paperwork in. She gets the judge to sign the order. She goes, hustle up downstairs, get that money on deposit.
Wow.
And so I go back down to that same clerk. I said, look, the judge signed it. She's like, I could tell she was a little perturbed. I had gone around her.
Of course.
Because
she cares more about her ego than she does about a man that's going to be homeless. And I'm not criticizing the girl. I'm just I want the audience to know that this is going to be stuff that you'll run into in this business.
Right.
I'm sure you ran into this being an agent in the four prior years.
Yeah.
Escrow officer will do this. Loan officers will do this. Other agents will lie to you. I'm sure there's been deals where you've done on traditional real estate transactions mm-hmm. where like that agent's obviously lying and they're blowing the deal up and you go and figure it out. Like you are a get it done kind of dude and you're going to run into those people that are like, I don't have the answer, but I'm going to give you the incorrect answer. And most people will go, oh darn, I don't want to upset her and go around her. So I'm going to let this person go be homeless. You're like, no, dude. I don't care about your feelings. I don't care what's going on. Yeah. We got to get this solved.
You know, and at the very least, I at least wanted to go down swinging.
Yes.
And exhaust my resources, even if that
put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Which part? What was the
go phrase? Down swinging?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
You know, and it's a basketball mindset. Shoot your shot.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. Like, even if you miss it, you.